Today on the show, I'm happy to have Paul Silva. He's the manager at the River Valley Investors Angel Group. And today we're going to go over the 7 ways you can raise capital and which are the most underappreciated and overappreciated. Paul, thanks for coming in and sharing these insights today.
The delight to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So I want to start with customers and bootstrapping. Overrated or underrated?
Totally underrated, right? Because customers give you money and all they ask for is product. They don't want stock certificates. They don't want a lien on your house or anything. And when you give them the product, that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's why your company exists. So it's the most purely aligned. Of course, it's not perfect because it takes a while before you can give a product and the customers want lots of things. And if they don't pay for a bunch of things up front, then you might not have the capital to grow as fast as you want or give them everything they need. So when you're bootstrapping, you grow slower and you have to miss a fair number of opportunities, but you keep full control of your business and you're really aligned with what you need to do. So it's really underappreciated.
How does one actually bootstrap?
Luckily, there are a lot of Chad, when I was young, we didn't have the Kickstarter or anything like that. We had to figure out how to do pre-sales some other way. So before you have a thing, how can you figure out how to generate pre-sales? And a lot of entrepreneurs don't appreciate that if you've truly identified a hair on fire problem for your customers, then you can find a subset of them that will pay you for a primitive initial version of your service. They might not pay you a lot, but they will pay you something or they will prepay you to get it. And that's the key to really getting bootstrapping started.
It gives you a lot of proof of concept bootstrapping. You know if your customers are going to spend money on your product.
Oh, absolutely. And so anyone who's doing, say, a consumer-oriented thing, right? Once Kickstarter came on the scene, it really changed my world of angel investing. Because now if you came to an angel investor group with a consumer-oriented product and you hadn't done a Kickstarter, we were like, why do you want my money to figure out if customers want your thing? You should be coming to me saying, I've had a successful Kickstarter, so I've de-risked that part. Now I need your money to not make it out of duct tape and baling wire and to not do it in my garage. That's a much easier sell. You're going to get a much better value for your company, a much better deal from me trying to get investment. So it's so beautiful when you get the customer buying, because it also lets you know, why are you doing? You're not doing this to give up equity in your company to raise money. That's not fun. You're building your company because you want to make the thing and put it in customer hands. Hopefully you get rich doing it.
I think that brings us right to the second way to raise capital. Let's talk about crowdfunding. Overrated or underrated?
Oh, gee. Depends on the moment and the subset, right? So it's probably a bit overrated in a lot of places, but it's also really underrated in other places. So it's overrated because, like many new awesome things, people think it's a cure-all. Oh, I'm just going to go on Kickstarter, and as long as I have a good idea, then I'll raise a bunch of money. No, that's not the way it works. And I say Kickstarter, but there's lots of different crowdfunding platforms. There are crowdfunding platforms for equity and for revenue-based financing. Crowdfunding actually could be any of the other 7 flavors of capital, because you're aggregating lots of little checks. You have to do a lot of work to get a bunch of people to be excited about you. What's nice about the platforms is they create a there's an audience there and there's consistent best practices on how to reach them. But some of my star students 7 years ago, so forever ago in internet time, had to spend about $250,000, mostly in kind. But they spent real money to do a Kickstarter campaign that got them $1 million. That's not cheap. That's not easy. So people think it's just going to be easy, and it often is not.
How about friends and family? Overrated or underrated?
It depends on your friends and family. I relied on friends and family for my first company, and I am very fortunate that I have 30-something aunts and uncles. I had a big funnel that I could narrow down, and I could say, okay, who has money? Who can afford to lose it? And who has a mature enough relationship with money and in general with me so that if I lose it, Thanksgiving dinner will not haunt me for the rest of this aunt or uncle's life? Because that's the downside of friends and family, is there's few ways to destroy a friendship or a relationship faster than with money. So you have to be incredibly judicious with it. So I highly recommend that people be only do friends and family if they're very careful about which friends and family members they're bringing in, that they're completely upfront with them. With my first company, I told my aunts and uncles, hey, thank you. You've agreed to give us this money. I want to remind you that I am a computational physicist. This is a landscape architect. We want to make video games for the blind. We think it's going to be great, but the odds shouldn't look good to any outside observer. You should assume you're losing every penny. And because we did that, I have had just fine Thanksgivings with everyone, but you need to really take that into consideration. But the benefit is that they will fund you when no one else will, because they love you and they believe in you in a way that an investor who doesn't know you won't.
Before we move into numbers 4 through 7, do you like a bundle or a combination? So for example, you start bootstrapping, now you have a little bit of a proof of concept, then you go to friends and family.
Yeah, so there is no one right flavor of capital. So for the audience, we're gonna run through them all. Every single flavor has different pros and cons, and I know you're gonna share a link to a Google Sheet that sums all this stuff up for you folks. And so it's really about what stage of maturity your company is at and what kind of company that you're building. If you're building a family restaurant, there's a bunch of these flavors that'll never be right for you. And likewise, if you're building a high-tech company, there's a bunch of flavors that won't be relevant to you for years. Like a bank will not talk to you for years if you're some kind of tech company because you have no assets. So you do need different paths. But whenever you can start with, most people end up starting with friends and family. If the product that they're building requires some level of resources before they can make the thing. Now, sometimes that's just living in your parents' basement or something, and that's the investment that they're making. But often it's friends and families first. I recommend you go to bootstrapping as soon as you can. But if you're building like a clean tech company, I've got this amazing new chemistry for a battery, and it's going to require access to a laboratory that's $1 million a year. Like, you can't bootstrap that too easily, right? You got to be in the lab and do a bunch of things. You got to get government grants, which is completely different to get it. So it depends what kind of business that you're doing. But my general recommendation is avoid taking equity investment as long as you can. Not never take it, not always as a last resort, but it's very expensive. And so just be really cognizant of that and only take it when that truly is your best option.
Number one, we've went over customers and bootstrapping. Number two, we went over crowdfunding. Number three, friends and family. Number four, startup grants. Overrated or underrated?
They are often underrated because there's lots of different flavors of grants that are out there. So the challenge is there isn't some one directory you can go and find them all. There's lots of different directories because the government, each different part of the government funds different kinds of things. Some parts of the government will fund only nonprofit ideas. Some parts of the government will only fund for-profit ideas. And you must have less than this many employees, or it has to have a fig leaf that makes it look like it involves a missile or whatever. It depends on which department is issuing it. So you have to find these things, and they're hard to find. And also, in addition to the federal government, there are state government. There are county governments and towns. There are business plan competitions. All those things lump in together. So the hard part is finding them and figuring out if they're a fit for you. And then they tend to be very slow, right? Especially if it's a government agency. They're like, we accept applications in September every year. And then by September of the following year, we'll let you know if you got it. And then that I'm exaggerating a little, it can take a really long time to get the money. But it's not like other flavors of capital are 10 times faster. They might be 2 times faster. They might be 3 times faster. But so it can take a real long time. Those are some of the challenges of the government money. But the upside is, and you have to fill in lots and lots of paperwork, it's free money. So if there's money that's the right flavor for you, especially with do that clean, I've got some new battery chemistry. There's lots and lots of government money being thrown at green solutions. And you can qualify for that and you don't owe anybody anything. You've got that money to do what you need to do. So if you're the right kind of company and there's grants that are for you, you should go for it. If you're the wrong kind, if you're a company that there isn't a bunch of granting for, then don't kill yourself trying to do it. Move on to the next flavor.
So on to the next flavor. Number 5, debt. Overrated or underrated?
It is overrated, tremendously overrated. Debt is for very mature companies. We've all heard the story of some famous entrepreneur, there's several of them, that said, yeah, I took the mortgage on my house, I bet on my business, and that was what made me a success. But that's what's called survivorship bias. Didn't hear about the 90 other entrepreneurs for every one that succeeded that lost their house because they bet it on the companies. 80% of startups fail. So no matter how good you are, you need to say, if you're putting your family's house on the line, that I have an 80% chance of failure. So don't do that. Now, and the banks won't touch you because banks make very little profit margin on every loan. So the only way they can work is if you default less than 1% of the time, if the people they loan to default. What startup has a less than 1% chance of failure? None. So they won't loan to you until you're so grown up and mature that it's beside the point. So debt is almost never a good source of capital for startups. Maybe some credit cards at the very beginning, But be really careful because they charge huge interest rates. I'd rather try to figure out how to do something else whenever possible.
So number six, revenue and royalty-based financing. Is it underrated or overrated?
Dramatically underrated. Matter of fact, almost no one knows about it. So royalty-based financing is when, all right, I give Chad a check for $1 million, and what Chad agrees to do is give me some percentage of his revenue. So 5%, say, off of your top line revenue until you've paid me back. Usually it's a multiple. So I'm giving you $1 million. You owe me $2 million. Huh. But I might get it in 1 year. If you totally kill it next year, that'd be crazy. You have to generate $20 million in revenue next year. But wait, I could make it all back in 1 year, which would make an amazing investment for me. Or it could take me 20 years because I'm just getting 5% until you've paid me the $2 million. So what's nice for the entrepreneur is you're paying a big bill only when you've made a lot of money. And if you didn't make a lot of money, then you're paying a small bill. So that's really attractive. And in terms of how much you're paying versus if you took equity, it's much, much cheaper than taking equity funding, like from an angel investor or a venture capitalist. They want 10 times their money back. They don't get it all the time. Most of the time they don't, but that's the demand. If you're successful, you're going to give them 10 times the amount of money they gave you or more. Whereas with royalty-based, you're probably going to give them 2x. Now, because of that, because their profit margins are better than banks, but not as good as equity, that means that they will not work with you when you're a raw startup pre-revenue. They usually don't want to talk to you until you're a $500,000 or $1 million in revenue, which depending on your audience, some of them are like, that doesn't matter to me. That's way far away. But I can't tell you how many times I've been talking to an entrepreneur who's approaching me as an angel investor. And I'm like, wait, you got $1 million in revenue? Yeah. Why are you trying to take money from me? You should be talking to these people. So they just don't know about it. And so they only go to the most expensive money. So that's why if you're generating north of $500,000 in revenue, you should absolutely be looking at people that provide revenue-based finance.
And then last but not least, equity. Overrated or underrated?
It's generally overrated because it's really sexy. Everyone loves talking about it. When I lose a $100 million round, like hold, pop the champagne. No, you just gave up 30% of your company. You just gave up 50% of your company. That is not a reason to celebrate. It's valuable. I've been a leader in an equity-based investment group for 20 years. It plays its role. The advantages of equity funding are ones that lots of people heard. Like you get a lot of money when pretty much no one else would give it to you other than like friends and family. Like after that, like it's the next highest risk tolerance group of people. They don't get paid unless you get paid, right? If your company fails, they take nothing from you at all. Even if you like made revenue for a while and then fail, they don't get a piece of that revenue. Whereas in revenue-based financing, they do, right? They only get money if there's a big payout at the end, generally. So that's really attractive. And matter of fact, as an entrepreneur, you could almost think of it as, I never have to pay this money back. I'm going to take money from Paul and then I'm going to sell my company and the person that buys my company will pay Paul. I never pay Paul. So that's pretty cool. That is definitely pretty cool. The drawbacks are, you are now married to me. And it is literally easier to divorce a relationship spouse than it is to divorce me, the equity investor. And many times the equity investors will get in the contract with you, yes, I own 30% of your company, which means you're in charge, Chad. But it says here in paragraph 3 that if I feel like you're underperforming and enough other people on the board feel like you're underperforming, then you may keep your shares in your company, but you're no longer the CEO. Right, I can fire you. Also, if you've taken my money, then you are selling your company. There's a very small number of companies that go public on the stock exchange, but for the most part, like, no, Chad, I don't care that this is your baby and that you love it. You're selling it. If you want to stay on when Amazon buys you, I don't care. That's between you and Bezos. But you're going to sell this goddamn company and give me my big fat exit because I have useless stock certificates and they are not worth anything until I get to sell them to Amazon. And so that creates a lot of pressure on the entrepreneurs. You have to grow very fast and you have to sell your company and you've got someone who has a lot of control in your company. Those are a lot of downsides, but the upsides are spectacular. Also, because I clearly have very strong interest alignment with you. I really want you to grow fast. If I could introduce you to people, I'm not just going to do it because I like you and as a favor. It is very much in my economic interest to help you succeed. If equity funding is right for you, it's really right. But I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs go for it when it wasn't really right for them. They fooled themselves into thinking that it was right for them because they needed the money. And that was the only place they could get the money. But they were basically making a deal with the devil, not that angels are devils or VCs are devils, but they forgot, I have to sell my company. Yeah, that was it. And then they have a fight with their investor. Like, Why are we having a fight? We agreed you were going to sell the baby. That was the deal at the beginning. You can't have buyer's remorse now. So that's really hard.
As you said, you're getting into a marriage. So you want to make sure that you're very strategic in who you are allowing to take the equity in your company. Because you're stuck with that person for the life of that business. That could be a 10, 15 year run. So that's very important.
Most people will date their future spouse much longer than they date their investors. And investors are group marriages. You're not just married to one person. You can invest a bunch of different people. It's really complex, much harder to divorce. And most, it'd be like going on a dating site and you just need to impress me. I need to like you, Chad. At no point you need to figure out if I'm going to be a good partner for you. Because that's the setup. Yes, prove to me. I'm awesome. I have the money, Chad. Grovel at my feet and show me you are worthy of my love and most importantly, my money. And only if you do that, then you're my bitch. So you want to find people that are really, great investors are incredible, but you got to do that dating and make sure that you're right. There are also investors who are great, but they're not going to be a good chemistry fit. Just like there's lots of people that could marry you, and they're wonderful people and they'll make a great spouse for someone else, but not for you. You got to make sure you're aligned.
Second thing on that is if you got into entrepreneurship for freedom, taking on equity investors, you're going to lose that freedom. If you think you're going on vacations when you want, and you think you have full freedom to make any decision you want, those are not true statements.
You have all the freedom in the world so long as you are continuing to deliver on the numbers that they wanted.
As long as
you're doubling the company's value every 12 to 18 months, you can take all the vacations you want.
Yeah.
But that's really hard to do.
So now we went over the 7 different ways to put together capital for your startup, for your business. There's no one size fits all. Right. It is a combination of the aspects that you think make the most sense for you. So me and Paul, we're going to share some insights here in a document within the podcast as well. And thank you, Paul, for coming on today. If anybody wanted to reach out or get in touch, learn more directly from you, how could they do?
Sure. You can find me on LinkedIn, Paul G. Silva, linkedin.com/in/Paul G. Silva. You can email me directly, paul.silva@angelcatalyst.com. And I'm always happy to help a polite and awesome entrepreneur.
Thank you, Paul, for coming on the show and everybody for listening to another episode of Failing to Success. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe. I'm your host, Chad Galecki, and we'll see you next time.